Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. This week, we talked through some new hardware changes, both current and upcoming, some Google Home fixes and new services, some great deals out there, flagship Chromebook versus videos, and so much more. If you've been following along with Chrome Unboxed on the web and on YouTube, you might have seen us do a couple comparison videos here recently, all of which are pitting the Google Pixelbook against other Chromebooks,
right?
So let's talk about this. We put it up against the Asus C302 and the Samsung Chromebook Pro. Correct. And what did we find out?
Well, we wanted to specifically do those two devices because they're similar with their internals. Now, there's quite a few things that are different about both of them, especially in relation to the Pixelbook. But overall, we wanted to use both of those two in different videos, not all three at the same time, so that people could look and say, okay, I'm considering a Pixelbook, but there's these other Chromebooks that are like half the price. And especially with some of the deals that were happening around the time of the videos, I mean, the Samsung Chromebook Pro was $450. The Asus was $399.
Yeah, under $400.
And they fluctuate, and they'll continue to because they're almost a year old, both of them. So, well, in idea anyway, we saw the Pro at CES last year. But the idea was people have been asking about both of these devices. And so we did the Samsung first. We had one and put it against the Pixelbook because those are the most similar. So they share a similar screen. Probably we think it's the same screen panel. They both have pins and pin input, and so all the new stuff that's happening around pin input on Chrome OS is centered around those two devices. They both have that 3:2 aspect ratio, so there's a lot of stuff in common. They're both convertibles. They're both getting a lot of the newest stuff, and we're going to talk about another feature in a few minutes that they both have. So those two share probably the most similarities. So that was the clear-cut winner as far as, you know, having a versus video. And basically, if you haven't watched the video, you know, either one of these videos, I would say, you know, hop over to the YouTube page, so youtube.com/Chrome Unboxed. You can go to chromeunboxed.com and just look under click reviews at the top. You can find it there too, and you can watch the whole video because they're lengthy, and we really go into depth about what's different between the two and why one's better than the other. And, you know, spoiler alert, I don't think this surprises anyone, the Pixelbook's better than both of those other two devices. And you know, that's not shocking. And, you know, Gabriel's used the Pixelbook. I operate from it on a daily basis. And Joe has spent some time with the Pixelbook and some of these other devices. So I'll give you all a second to maybe comment on these things. But like I said, you can watch the videos in full and really get the in-depth stuff. There's no way I could do that justice here. But, you know, do know that even though the Pixelbook is at times twice as much as either one of those two Chromebooks, the Asus Flip C302 or the Chromebook Pro from Samsung, it is a lot better at just about everything than both of those devices. But that was just kind of my takeaway from it.
Right, and for me, it's I agree with Robbie wholeheartedly. The Pixelbook is the best of the best. It is a beautiful device. The hardware is built just phenomenally. The internals are the best you can get on the market. But it's a matter of what you're in the market for. If you want the best of the best, then that's what you need to buy. Myself, I love the Asus C302. I have since we took, and we had a pre-order model we took to CES with us beginning of this year, last year.
Oh, yeah.
And I love it. I love everything about it. There are some things that it's missing, but it's a great device. I love the feel of it. I love the look of it, the build quality. If I had my choice and you were going to give me one, then yeah, I'd take the Pixelbook. But if I'm going to go out and buy a device that will meet my needs and I really enjoy using, then it's the Asus.
Right.
The Samsung is the same way. If you like that type of device and you are, you know, a lot of people like the rounded edges of the Samsung. I don't like it. The Pixelbook's the other end of the spectrum. It's razor edge, you know, 90 degree angles, and the Asus kind of strikes a balance in between. And it's just a matter of what you like or whether or not you're the type of person that wants the best on the market. So
yeah, and one thing I'll point out, in the review, you know, Robbie mentioned multiple times both of these devices are really good.
Right.
When
right.
we were talking about the C302 and the Pro, like we would go through the screen and be like, yeah, you know, the Pixelbook's better, but man, they're both just really good. And
right.
You know, you kept coming back to that. So Gabe, you know, you're right. It really just boils down to, you know, what your situation is and what exactly you need the device for. But yeah, so, you know, if you all haven't seen those videos or read those reviews on the website, they're lengthy. They're like 20 plus minutes long. So we go into some detail. So if you're interested in getting all of those details, please find that there. Moving on, we've got some new developments with dictation on a Chromebook.
Yeah, we have come across some stuff, and again, I do want to stress, most of the stuff we're going to talk about, you can find more about it at chromeunbox.com if you want to read more details about some of the stuff, because we're going to get into a bunch of things in this podcast. But in general, there's clear signs that dictation is coming to the OS at an OS level, which is pretty awesome. So right now, there's a workaround for it. If you have a convertible device, you can actually flip it into convertible mode, and I think there's a flag even too, isn't there, that you can turn it where you can get those options. I don't know.
Yeah, basically, you can force tablet.
Yeah. So it basically rests in the virtual keyboard. You can go to pen input, or you can hit a microphone there. So that's kind of a workaround for it. But the idea being, there is a keyboard shortcut that will be enabled, and basically throughout the entire OS, anywhere there's a text field, you can put your text cursor in there, hit that shortcut, and start talking. And I don't know. You know, if you're listening to this and going, man, that doesn't sound very useful, you should try it on your phone from time to time. Mm-hmm. Anywhere there's a text field, you can bring up your keyboard and hit that mic and speak whatever it is, and you can speak punctuation into it too. So if you're replying to an email that needs punctuation, it's not just a text message or something in an Allo or Hangout or something like that, you know, you can speak all that punctuation in, and once you kind of get used to it, you can do it quickly, and I can do that a whole lot quicker than I can type.
Right.
So I'm super excited about that coming to Chrome OS.
Yeah, it's a cool little it's a cool little tweak, right? It's a cool little extra feature.
And I think it's one of those things that some people will just latch onto. For me, I love it. I use it on my phone all the time, but there are other features. One in particular that comes to mind is swipe keyboard. I never use swipe keyboard. I've never used it. It's almost a refusal to use it. I don't like it, and I don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
But the speech dictation, I use it on my phone as often as I can, and I think people that are accustomed to using it on their mobile device will find a use for it on their Chromebook, especially when you talk about things like emails and replying to messages. Like Robbie mentioned, it's just a very handy tool.
Yeah. I want to get to the point where dictation, like, they can add in the punctuation for us without me having
man.
To. So, Robbie, or text Robbie. Robbie, I am almost there, comma. I will be there in 15 minutes, period.
Yeah. And you would think machine learning, you know, Google's investing all this money into AI and stuff, like, that's got to be coming, right? There's got to be a time where they can hear the inflection, the rise in your voice, and know, or hear you getting excited about something and put an exclamation
point. Yeah, exactly.
But it would fix a lot of people's grammar.
Grammarly does it to a degree.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it figures that stuff out. If you could just, like, speak it and it would, like, properly punctuate
exactly.
it, that would be pretty amazing.
Well, and on a Chromebook, like you said, like, replying to an email and being able to just speak and it dictate it perfectly with proper punctuation, that would be incredible. But, anywho, one day, right, maybe?
If anybody at Google's listening,
please work on that.
Dragon does a very good job of that.
Oh, there you go, sure.
They just buy them.
Yeah, so one other cool thing we've seen is Netflix being offered up for 6 months with a couple with the purchase of a couple new Chromebooks.
Yeah, they and this just kind of came out of the blue. Netflix has kind of been a big deal since the launch of the Chromebook. That was one of the key points at the announcement, was that one of the purposes of the large storage on the Pixelbook is so you can download your movies on the go. And with the Android version of Netflix, you can do that. But just popped up on the Chrome offers page a week or two ago. If you've purchased a Samsung Chromebook Pro or Plus or a Google Pixelbook, you can head to google.com/Chromebook/offers, and you can redeem 6 months free of Netflix. So, pretty good deal.
Well, yeah, it's a great deal, and it's cool just to see Netflix partnering and doing things like this. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done a couple of these things, you know, already. You know, the AR stickers with Stranger Things.
Yeah.
You know, that's a Netflix original that we're seeing on, you know, the Pixel 2 in the camera app. Which, just, if you haven't tried,
I was gonna say, can we
let's just geek out on that.
Let's talk about
it
for a second.
Oh my God! If you haven't played with AR stickers on a Pixel 2 or Pixel 2 XL, find someone who has it. I haven't gotten my 8.1 update yet. I'm being punished
because I did.
I returned my original Pixel 2 because that's what I do.
Interesting.
Yeah, long story. We can do a whole podcast about that story. But I believe Google is punishing me and holding out my 8.1. Yeah. And I wouldn't care other than I want the visual core for my camera and I want these AR stickers because we've got someone in the office. Now we have two in the office that have the AR stickers and the Star Wars stickers. Are amazing.
Yeah. Oh, so if you haven't done it, it might be worth buying a Pixel 2 just for those. I mean, it's that cool.
It is. Just a long story short, we had probably one of the most intelligent people I know in the office today is a developer. And a coworker who has the Pixel 2 and has the stickers, was in line at the coffee shop today and dropped three stormtroopers in line in front of him, took a little movie. And these things are ultra realistic. I mean, you can move around them in 3D space. But he took a video, a quick video of it, and sent it to us, and we all had a good laugh. Well, he was showing that to this developer today, and he had been in the coffee shop prior. And his response was, I was just down there. How did I miss those guys? And he thought there were actual people cosplay down at Vibe at the coffee shop. And this dude is not some dummy. This dude's smart. Like, really, really smart. And it totally fooled him. It was that realistic. And so, if you haven't messed with them, go and mess with AR stickers.
That's really, it's just cool stuff, man. Speaking of other cool stuff that Google's doing, we've got Santa. We're recording this podcast just a week or two before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so with that, Google's bringing Santa to Google Home.
Yeah, so there's the Santa Tracker, which I haven't really messed with this year much at all.
Yeah, they've done some really cool updates. There's some Guitar Hero kind of stuff on it, and we'll be publishing that later this week. But the Santa Tracker has Santa's Village, and every day there's new games to play and everything. It's really neat. But yeah, the addition to Google Home, which I think you've fiddled with it a little bit.
Yeah, we've played with it quite a bit. The kids
really... It's pretty fun.
Yeah, they love it. It's you just say, okay... I'm not going to set off all your things, so I'm just going to say call Santa, and it will, it'll mimic, the dial tones and all that stuff, and there's all this banter from the elves that answer the phone, put you on hold, and every time we've done it, it's been different banter in the background, and then Santa picks up, and he's trying, they know one song, and they're trying to decide what style they want to do the song in, and so they ask you a series of oddball questions, and based on the answers to those questions that you provide, they put the song together and then play it for you. And then each time you call, it ends up being a different type, a version of the song, a different version of the questions, different banter. And the kids just love it. They think it's just really cool. And my kids just happen to be the age that, they're still really into Santa. And so that's just been really neat to see Google Home, Google Assistant, because you can do this from your phone too.
Yeah.
So if you have anything with Google Assistant on, you can call Santa. And it's interactive and it's cool, but it's just different. It's not just... What's the weather? What's 6 times 6? And if you don't know that, man, you need to work on your math.
42, Doug.
Wow. Yeah, 77. It's 77, clearly. Those things are cool. And I love that Google Home and Google Assistant does all the trivial stuff and, specifically like trivia questions and, making phone calls. And the practical stuff's cool. But to see games coming along and to see partners like Disney coming along and making things specifically for voice activated entertainment stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. And we talked before in these podcasts about those experiments. And I think we're already starting to see people go, ooh, yeah, why not try this? Because what's it cost me? Nothing really. So,
well, and to me, it's Google being out there and providing just, cool stuff for users to be able to do. It's not like, here on Chrome Unboxed, we're always talking all the technical and all the cool stuff and the very in the weeds stuff. But, they're also out there doing cool stuff like this that you can sit and just have fun with your kids, you know, and they're spending time on this. It's not they just built this in a day or something.
No, it's very well done.
And so it's just, that's just cool stuff that they're working on. Kind of on the Google Home and some of the assistant stuff that we've been talking about. Home Mini has finally got a fix. And if you all didn't listen to our, I think that was our first podcast, was it not? Where we were talking about the Home Mini, basically.
Well, the first one would have been at Google.
So okay, no, so the second one. Second one. So, you know, Google Home having an issue. Well, now they've come out and they've got a fix for it, right?
Yeah, it's not. I don't know if it's rolled out yet. I don't think like my device at home hasn't gotten in. Have you tried it on yours?
I haven't.
It's in the what is it called? It's not developer preview. It's the
They have a preview program.
Yeah, that's
it's sort of.
It's like Chromecast. You get the update a little bit early.
Yeah, it's kind of a beta, but not really.
Yeah. So you're testing final hardware or final software, basically, as that works. So those people have it. So that means, you know, within a week or so, everybody should see it. And it's a quick fix, and it needed to happen. I've written an article saying basically Google needed to just recall the thing and put out proper ones. Well, they didn't listen to me. And didn't do that, and so a little shocked.
Time.
No, maybe that's why I haven't gotten my 8.1 update. They're like, "Screw you, buddy."
Yeah, we're gonna teach you a lesson, Robbie Payne.
Shut up,
Chrome Unbox.
But and so the problem was, we'll recap real quick. The top button just didn't work. The top surface area, and so they have this like special cloth. Like during the presentation of the device, when they brought it up on stage, they made a big deal about the cloth.
Absolutely.
Like
oh, yeah.
It was
the design
we made
that went
cloth
into it.
Like. From scratch, you know, and so that light can come through it and sound can come through it and you can touch it and blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. Well, apparently hopefully that's not going to affect the Macs. I'm assuming it's the same cloth, but somehow the way that they put it together, it was obviously triggering the voice recognition for hours at a time and just recording people. And so obviously that's not cool. So in order to fix it quickly, they turned off that top touch area. Well, they never turned it back on. And so apparently it means they couldn't find a way to fix the hardware. So instead of reissuing new ones, they left it off for a while. Now there's a workaround where you could hold down either volume button on either side of the device, and that acts as your play pause button. So it's not as good. It isn't. I mean, I still use that top touch button area on my regular Google Home, and I would assume if I had a Google Home Max, I would do the same. But at least they've done something to remedy the situation.
Right.
And it kind of at least fixes it for now until next year comes and they put it.
Yeah, because I think the only place it really becomes a nuisance, because, I mean, if you're close to it and you want to pause it, long press on the sides, that's not a big deal. But I think where it becomes a nuisance is the top touch button was worked as a snooze as well.
Yeah.
If you happen to use it as an alarm, and that's kind of disappointing that you can't do that.
And it may work for them.
It may work with the long press, but yeah. When I wake up at 5:45 in the morning,
finding the
I want to smack my Google
Home.
Dang
it, where's it at?
not long press it. And then the long
unplug
press
and throw
for
it across the
the long press for the assistant button, that I guess that will never happen.
I don't think that's going to work.
Because it never worked on mine because they nerfed it before I ever got the update. So
yeah. Speaking of Google Home Max... you mentioned it a second ago, but it's out, right? So we've got this. We've got this jumbo Google Home now.
It's huge.
It's huge. You know, none of us got our chance because we were so enamored with Pixelbook, and we didn't have like, you know, 6 or 8 hours at the Google event to really check everything out. I mean, I remember picking up a Pixel 2 for what,
5 minutes maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And so. The time was really spent on Pixelbook, and so I didn't even get to listen. So I have not heard Home Max yet, but the claims for what it's going to be capable of are lofty and really interesting. And I haven't seen anybody even drop a review yet. Have you? Like, I don't think there are any official reviews.
I've seen some hands-on, like initial unboxing, but no actual reviews.
Yeah. And the only thing I've seen is MKBHD snapped. You know, a couple shots where he was listening to it and cranking it up, and you know, he just gave it a thumbs up. And so the shtick with Google Home Max is it's everything about Google Home you like plus a premium speaker. And we're not talking like, oh, it sounds good. Like they're touting it like it's going to sound amazing. And it has 6 microphones on it that are constantly sensing the room. And so their video that they talk about is every wall, every surface you have reflects bass, and so eventually it muddies up sound. And so Google Home Max can listen to those reverberations, adjust to the room and the music you're playing, and so it's auto EQ'd all the time to sound great. And what they said on stage is it will do that within about 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. So if you pick it up and take it outside, it's going to change. Pick it up, take it back inside, take it to another room. It'll auto adjust on the fly using those microphones and machine learning. And that's, if I can pause here, like, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but this is probably one of the coolest things about what Google is doing right now. And I mentioned earlier about the fact that I returned my Pixel 2 XL because I was spooked about the screen. I've returned to it. I bought it again. And the reason why is mainly the camera in the thing is so good. It's so far in front of everything else that's out there. And I love the camera. But what makes the camera good is what excites me. Sure, it's probably got really good hardware, but there's probably other cameras that have either better or just as good hardware in them at a cheaper price. It's not the hardware that's doing the work. It's the software. It's machine learning. It's you know, scary as AI sounds. It's those types of things that are making the camera better as time goes on. So I fully expect, just like I do kind of with my Chromebook, that in 6 months from now, it's going to be a better camera.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that doesn't exist anywhere else. And so, like, that should apply with the Google Home Max, right? I mean, that same idea that you're using machine learning with hardware, you're going to get a product that actually is going to improve over time. Like, when you get the Google Home Max out, set it in room A and play it, and it sounds an 8 out of 10, there's a good chance in a few months it's going to get smarter and it'll be a 9 out of 10. And maybe it'll sound perfect in 6 months or 8 months. And, like, that's bewildering to me. That's amazing. And I think that's at the core of what Google's trying to do right now, of saying, hey, we want to take AI, machine learning, mix it with good hardware that is optimized to use it, and then do really cool stuff with it. And you see it in Chromebooks, you see it in their phones, and now you're seeing it in their speakers and stuff too. So very, very cool stuff and stuff to get excited about.
Well, just looking at the breakdown here, we're in luck. It looks like the touch functions aren't on the fabric. So
there you go. Learn their lesson quick. Huh?
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get a Google Home Max here in the office.
We're slated for a review. So
You know, tune in for that. We'll have some thoughts on it, hopefully. So, but speaking of other kind of Google products out there that are improving, we've got Allo, which is a messaging app that we use quite frequently for work conversations, for just fun group conversations. You know, it's kind of replaced Hangouts for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I really ever send Robbie or Gabe an actual text message because we just do everything in Allo now. But Allo now has, or is slated to have, multi-device support, where you could actually install the actual app on multiple devices. Is that right?
Right, and that's been one of the few complaints about Allo from the people that are using it, is that if you're not familiar with it, they launched a web app a few months ago where you can go to allo.com/web, I think. And you can sync it with the Allo app on your phone. It pops up a QR code, you sync it, and now you have Allo desktop messaging. The caveat is you can only use it on one device at a time. So you have it on your phone, I have it on my Chromebook. I flip over to another Chromebook or whatever device I'm using, it will prompt me that I'm logged in on another device and ask me if I want to switch. And I mean, it's not a big deal. Robbie and I have discussed this. It's not a big deal. We have a dozen Chromebooks floating around the office and we switch all the time. It's not that big of a deal to switch, but some people want to install an app on their device, and that's understandable. And as more non-Chrome OS users might start moving towards Allo, then they're going to want something like that, and they don't want to have to mess with switching back and forth. So this could offer up the ability to link it. I think, how's it going to work? Is it going to link to your actual Google account
I think, and that's the other big part of this, is that now they're actually going to integrate Google account. So similar to how you would have signed into Hangouts or any other, you know, well, I don't want to say any other because they all handle things differently. So Allo is taking more of a WhatsApp approach to a messenger versus the way Hangouts worked. And so Hangouts you could not use without a Google account. And so it looks like it's probably going to be a toe in the line between the two. Mm-hmm. So you'll probably be able to add your Google account if you choose. So you'll still use your phone number as your primary way that people get in hold of you, but you'll also possibly be able to just choose to add the Google account. It didn't sound like they're going to force you to use it. And I can't imagine they would change course that much and move it to it. But the benefit is most people that are using Allo are probably going to be Google people anyway. So if you use Allo at all, you know that when somebody might get added to a chat or something that only uses it with their phone, and it just, if you don't have that person's phone number in your contacts, their name's not in there. It's just they're a phone number. And their name will be like in a parenthesis or something, but it doesn't pull in their full like contact info that you're used to seeing. So there's a lot of benefit to all that stuff. When it all actually arrives.
And Gabe, you just mentioned web app. You were talking about how they had released this web app version of Allo mm-hmm. where you could go and scan. But we've also got some other developments with web apps, right? So
yeah.
Progressive web apps are coming along, right? They're getting there, but we've got some new developments.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it's been a long time coming with Google and other partners pushing this, but just this week, Google did follow through with what they had planned, and they've shut down the Chrome Web Store for Microsoft for desktops that are not Chrome OS.
Well, specifically just the web app portion.
Web app portion. So extensions will continue to exist, but the web app portion, which... give or take, web apps are essentially just gussied up versions of a web browser or something working inside a web browser. If you do use Chromebooks, if you're listening to us, you probably do or have. Most of what you use is either the browser or a web app. But they're moving towards progressive web apps, which gives developers a lot more flexibility as far as I go to a website on a regular basis. I want that website in an application form.
Right.
I now have the capability to install it as a web app.
Right.
And Robbie had actually written up earlier this week about the web apps going away for desktop, and probably has some thoughts on what direction that's going.
Yeah, the idea is here that Google's actually doing something, and it's funny, in the middle of the whole net neutrality shenanigans that's going on right now, in the middle of all that. Google's doing something really positive for the web in general. And so by saying, hey, we're going to move away from Chrome web apps to just progressive web apps in general, and that they're not just kind of saying that, they're actively doing things that are pushing developers in that direction. And so the basic difference is a Chrome web app would be something that would only run if you had Chrome installed. A progressive web app would run in Firefox or Internet Explorer. What am I talking about?
Sorry.
but it would run in Edge. It would run in Safari. So a modern browser, Opera, could run a progressive web app. Now, they're all going to handle the way that you deal with them in different ways. But in general, the idea is that you have a service and you want to be able to deliver it via the web. And that really breaks down to just, can you get there via URL? And, that's what a progressive web app does. So there's nothing to install. There's nothing to download and put on your local device. It's all a web-based scenario. And so Google pushing developers in that direction is a really awesome thing, because it's not pushing them necessarily towards Chrome. They don't mm-hmm. have to write things in Chrome. And so it's not serving themselves. They're serving the web in general here. And so I'm, as silly as it sounds like, I feel proud of Google for making that step, for not just saying it, but now shutting things down and moving forward. And hopefully they'll provide some clear ways. We're seeing signs, and we haven't fully researched it yet, so I don't want to get into all that. But we're seeing signs that they're even going to clear paths for people to find progressive web apps. So right now, if I said, hey, go find a progressive web app, you'd probably look at me a little sideways and be like, I don't know where to go. And that's the thing. There are websites that exist as progressive web apps. They are. They provide a service that's more than just text on a page or pictures. They require development and a lot of JavaScript and all this kind of stuff. And so there needs to be a place where people can find them. And so the Chrome Web Store, if it gets rebranded to just something else, the Google Web Store maybe or something like that, could be a place where all your extensions and your themes for Chrome could live. Great, those all stay there. But then also, just like there is in the Chrome Web Store right now, there are things where you click and there's an app description and all this kind mm-hmm. of stuff. there's no way to install it. You click it and you go to a website.
Right.
And so the same thing could happen. Like, they just keep that whole structure in place, maybe rebrand it and gussy up the store a little bit. But it becomes a place where people can go and find really cool things that are happening on the web and services that are happening and things like Allo that we were just talking about and, you know, Hangouts that exists on the web. And if you've ever been to photos.google.com and dealt with your photos there, I mean, that's an awesome web app. It just lives in a web browser. And if they'll make clear inroads to that, then people can utilize it. Developers will be more inclined to actually continue developing in that space. And the only other thing they really need to do, like for me personally, if I'm opening up Allo, for instance, I don't want it in a tab. It feels weird. There's all my shortcuts and all that crap up there. I just want it in a clean window. Well, in Chrome and in Windows, so Chrome OS and Windows both, you can very easily go to your menu, I think more tools, something like that, click add to shelf. So yeah, more tools, add to shelf. It'll ask you how to name it. Do you want to open it as a window? Sure, boom, it's on your shelf. You click it, it opens up just as a window. They need to make that process clearer and easier and more straightforward. And we're seeing some signs that they're also working on that. So. Probably going to see some things shifting in the web app space, and that's an encouraging thing just for the internet as a whole that Google is on board with that and really pushing developers in that direction.
Right, and that's where I think they're at right now, is trying to find a way to package that in a nice, clean manner that users can navigate and recognize, because the fact of the matter is we're already using these things on a daily basis.
Sure.
Some of you don't even know it, and a lot of people with Windows machines and things like that have been saying, well, where are my apps going to go and this and that, whatever. All of those things still exist. It's literally, as Robbie said, you're navigating to a URL. It's just a matter of how it's delivered.
Sure.
So now Google is working on how are these things presented to the user so that they can have a nice, easy way to recognize, okay, I want to make this an app. And whether it's a shortcut on your desktop or on your shelf or whatever it looks like, that's what they're in the process of working on right now, because the progressive web apps are there. I mean, they're there, they're mm-hmm. functional. If you have a website, you can turn it into a progressive web app.
Yeah, and I mean, other really cool web-type things that Google is working on. We've wrote a great article about this and seen some really cool things about remote desktop for web now.
Yeah, so that's
prime example,
exactly,
right?
I mean, and this one doesn't need much explanation, but if you've ever used Chrome Remote Desktop, it's a fantastic remote desktop solution. It's always been my go-to one when I needed to tell somebody, hey, you need to remote into something. And most of it hasn't changed, except for the fact that you can remote in from a Chromebook to another Chromebook in the as far as support goes, and you don't have to install anything. You go to remotedesktop.google.com, I think is what it was.
So, yeah.
It's in beta, so it's coming mm-hmm. along, but you don't download anything.
Right.
You just go there, the other person goes there, and they give you a number, and boom, you're in there, like, controlling. I was controlling the Pixelbook with Samsung the other day.
Exactly, yeah.
And so for Windows and Mac users, there's a little download for them, because you could fully remote into those, because obviously you wouldn't want to necessarily do that with a Chromebook. There's no point in that. But all that to say, it's coming to the web, and that's a cool thing, because, again, it's Google not just saying that progressive web apps are important. It's Google showing that they're important,
sure.
that they're possible, and that they can be done well.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of remote desktop, some of that kind of support-oriented stuff that we're seeing, you know, that kind of ties into my next thing here, which is managed Chrome having a bit of an issue, but apparently there's a fix there, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah, and it was in a really narrow window, but it apparently affected a lot of people. And by now, most users have probably fixed the issue already. What had happened was back in the first week of December, any managed device that had certain policies in place through the admin console that forced them to connect to the organization's password-protected Wi-Fi, they were borked, essentially. Mm-hmm. They could not connect to the Wi-Fi. The fix was simple, and we have an article on this with the steps on how to fix it and then a link to the Google support page. Fixing it just meant connecting the device, whether it be a Chromebook or a managed Windows device using Chrome. They just needed to connect to the internet so the policy could refresh mm-hmm. and it would work again. Well, the problem is they can't connect to the internet because the policy was broken. And it happened, like I said, very small window. I think it was December 5th, like 10 a.m. to noon, like a two-hour window if those devices were online, which for schools, most of those devices were probably online. But essentially, it just required admins to either create an open network with no password, or manually re-enter the passwords, or use a mobile hotspot. Somehow get your devices connected to an internet connection, give them a few minutes to refresh the policies, and then reconnect to the organizational network.
So has that been solved now? It's completely cool
Yeah,
now?
It's completely fixed. I've seen a few people. We got a weird spike. There was another managed Chromebook issue a couple of months back, and we had a weird spike in traffic on that article. Probably people looking for a fix to this problem. So it looks like it's cooled down. Google fixed the problem immediately. It was just a matter of getting that fix to the users.
Sure.
So
yeah.
If you happen to be in an organization who's having some connectivity issues, that might be your problem. And if you haven't found the answer, check out the article on the site. It's got the steps on how to do that. So
cool. Switching gears here a little bit, guys, let's talk about a couple hardware things. I know we've got a lot to talk about here, so we're kind of bouncing around here, but I'll kind of package a couple of these hardware things here. So trackpad, pinch, and zoom. Mm-hmm. So I know you all wrote a great article about this, but explain a little bit about what we've got.
It doesn't work on this Chromebook.
Yeah, it's funny how we came across it. I literally looked over, and Gabe was trying to pinch zoom on the Acer C771, which we're reviewing. And he's like, it was working the other day, and I don't know what's going on. It stopped working. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's not working. Pinch zoom. It's like, pinch zoom has never worked on the trackpad because I wanted that to be a thing for a while. I know it hasn't worked. He's like, it was working for me yesterday. And so come to find out, he was using the Pixelbook the day before. And so this feature is now live on the Pixelbook and the Samsung Chromebook Pro and Plus.
Yeah. I told you, we have a lot of Chromebooks around here, okay?
it gets confusing sometimes. But so for those users, and eventually, I don't know. See, like there was that new driver update, right? The Google Centroiding.
Yeah, the Centroiding.
So I don't know that every device will be able to get this. I don't know if it has to do with that or not. We don't know. But we do know that those three devices have this. And basically what it is just like you would pinch zoom the screen, you pinch zoom on the trackpad and it,
same thing.
It
yeah.
zooms in and out. And it's just nice if you're browsing through something and the text is small. I know it sounds ridiculous that instead of reaching up to touch the screen, but your hands are already on the trackpad to be able to zoom in real quick and zoom it back out. It's a cool feature to have.
It was literally a pot of gold for me because I'm constantly reading through the Chromium repositories and the text is just slightly smaller than I'm comfortable with when you're reading lines and lines and lines of code. But I don't like zooming my screen because then I have to zoom it back when I'm done. And
yeah,
this and
sure,
that, whatever.
Sure.
So pinch it to zoom out and zoom back in. It was incredible. And now that I'm on a different device, it's frustrating as all get out.
I want it back.
Well, speaking of other hardware stuff, we've got a couple things here to talk about with SD cards and Chromebooks. What do we know, guys? I mean,
Specifically, we've seen a lot of stuff about users wanting to be able to have SD card support in Android apps on Chromebooks. So, you know, to make it clear, Chromebooks and SD cards are fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Android app situation, and it's kind of muddled. It needs work.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had an article up just basically saying, yeah, it's there. It works. We've identified a handful of apps, and I didn't search every app. There's millions. But I found apps where read and write support was fine to the SD card. So saving and opening files was fine. Some of them would save to it, but wouldn't open from it. Some of them would open from it, wouldn't let you. It was really weird. So it's all over the board. But case in point is, it does work. It does function. But it seems like, however the file systems differ between Chrome OS and Android, the developers for Android apps will have to do something to make the SD card readable in their app. Is what it comes down to. It seems
right,
like.
Right. Because with your mobile phone, it's Android reading and writing directly to the SD card. With Chrome OS, it's back to the containers and sandboxing. Android is leveraging Chrome OS's hardware to do what it does. So everything it does, it has to essentially go through the gatekeeper.
Right.
That is Chrome
mm-hmm.
OS. So Chrome OS developers have to make tweaks for that, and the app developers have probably have to make tweaks for that as well. So work in progress. Honestly, who knows how long it could be? I mean,
I don't know how long it'll be until that's a smooth transition. Those are the parts of all of this that are going to keep slowly getting refined over time.
Just buy a Pixelbook with, you know,
tons of storage. Yeah. And you don't worry about it.
Exactly. Speaking of Pixelbook, last kind of hardware thing here. We had originally thought the Pixelbook was going to have a fingerprint scanner. Obviously, it does not. But maybe we're seeing some news out there that the might be coming.
Yeah, it's I was a little bit disappointed when we got to San Francisco and it did not have it, because I was convinced that it did. It was one of the first support commits that we found on Eve Pixelbook that it had a fingerprint sensor, and likely it does. Likely, if you have, you're sitting on a Pixelbook right now, it likely has support for a fingerprint scanner, but we were told not really anything clear, just that it didn't pan out was I think is what they said.
Yeah.
But recently we've seen more activity on the fingerprint scanner and a commit where they're actually testing capturing a fingerprint. We're not sure what the deal is. Obviously, they're working on it. I doubt it's the i7 model, because if you look at Best Buy and some other sites, it's sitting on shelves waiting to be sold. So I doubt that it's the i7. It very well could be these enterprise devices that we're looking at. And that's my guess. That's my gut feeling, is that Google's got some high-end Samsungs and Asuses coming out to enterprise, and that maybe they're putting a fingerprint scanner on a second iteration of a Pixelbook.
There's a bunch of things that could be the case there, and I lean a little bit more towards that, you know, the Pixelbook's what they have, and it's their flagship device, and as Googlers, they're going to have access to those to be able to open them up and put new stuff on the board.
Sure.
If you're going to test with something, if you got those around, why wouldn't you be testing it with that?
Yep.
So they can get all that stuff worked out so that the OS is ready for fingerprint input, and then, you know, it can ship on other devices that can just take that code and go, yeah, punch it and make it work on whatever Samsung or Asus or whatever else is going to go. So,
yeah, it's cool stuff, and you know, it's always progressing, right? So it's good stuff. But guys, you know, since it is the holiday season, I did want to mention we saw a deal for $100 off the Acer 15. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Where can people find it?
Yeah, and it's this device has been really elusive. It looks like Best Buy might be kind of an exclusive deal, mm-hmm. the way the Pentium based.
We're not seeing it on Amazon, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's on Amazon, but if you can get it, it's third-party resellers that have it for $500, which is $100 over retail.
It's almost like they're buying them at Best Buy.
Yeah, they're buying them and reselling them. Or directly from Acer, because right now the only two official places to buy it are Acer and Best Buy. And the Chromebook commercials that you've probably seen on television, if you see the ones with the Pro or the Pixelbook, they say get it at the Google Store, Amazon, Best Buy.
Right.
The Acer 15 just says Best Buy. So I'm thinking it's like the Asus C302 with the Pentium. It's kind of a Best Buy exclusive
thing. Best Buy's thing, I guess.
Yeah, but anyways, it's a $399 device. And in my opinion, you know, Robbie's still using it as a daily driver and going to have a review out soon. But I think it's worth $399.
It's right there.
$350 would probably be the sweet spot, but it's worth $399, especially if you need a larger device. Mm-hmm. Best Buy has it for $299, which makes it a no-brainer. I mean, I'm thinking about going and buying one. But they're also throwing in a Google Home. Not the Mini, a full-size Google Home. So retail wise, you're talking all $530 worth of stuff for $300.
Yeah, it's a killer deal. And as of recording this podcast, it's still out there.
Yeah.
It's still
a thing. Online, so. And if they happen to have one in stores, our Best Buy doesn't. If yours does, then God bless you for being near a nice Best Buy. But
this week's podcast was recorded with the FiFine Technologies USB microphone. This is a nice little compact microphone that we're really excited about. We're actually going to be taking this with us out to Las Vegas for CES to do some recordings out there. Great little device that they were kind enough to send to us. Just wanted to give them a shout out here. You can find them on Amazon, FiFine Technologies. You can find show notes over at chromeonebox.com/podcast, along with tons of other info covered in this episode. Additionally, you can find us online on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+ by searching @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.